in 1971, he ignited a firestorm, a national uproar, when he released the Pentagon Papers, which was the U.S. military's account of activity during the Vietnam War, to the New York Times. It was quite an eye-opening experience for most of the public, and Daniel Ellsberg joins us now. Daniel, thank you for being with us on the Eagle 93.9.
Very glad to be here. Thank you.
It struck me in reading a transcript of a radio interview you'd done some weeks ago that there might be some parallels between what took place in the early 70s, late 60s, early 70s, well, all through the Vietnam War, and what we're seeing now. Just for background, could you describe what was in the Pentagon Papers that people found so upsetting?
The Pentagon revealed that four presidents had deceived the public continuously about what they were doing in Vietnam, what they expected to happen, what they thought the cost would be, the prospects, what they were being told by their intelligence. In other words, we'd been lied into the Vietnam War at every stage, especially at the major escalation in 1964-65, but really going back all the way to the Truman administration as to what the nature of the fight was and what our prospects were. So the analogy at how we got into the war is almost exact. We were lied into Vietnam just as we were lied into the Iraq War. And at first, it didn't seem as though the wars themselves would have much resemblance. There was nothing like the blitzkrieg that in Vietnam that started in the Iraq War. But, of course, within months, actually, after victory was announced on May 1st by President Bush, it was pretty clear to me, having been in Vietnam, that we were in from very much the same kind of a war of basically a guerrilla war taking place this time in the cities rather than in the jungles, ambushes of American troops in a struggle against foreign occupation, a struggle basically for self-determination. In neither side was there a great prospect of a very government that would look very good from our point of view, perhaps from most people's point of view, emerging if we left. What there was every evidence of a very strong determination not to be ruled by foreigners, and one that took 10 years after the major escalation to be successful in expelling Americans from Vietnam. I think this war could go on a lot longer. There was no oil in Vietnam to keep us there, no bases that were very important to us in the region. I think it'll be a long time before Americans let go of the bases they're building, the permanent bases in Iraq, in the midst of those oil fields. And Americans will be dying and killing all that time.
Daniel, you mentioned that there were four American presidencies that covered the span of say disinformation or misinformation that was released during the Vietnam War.
There was a fifth. When I released them, there was the Nixon administration.
That's true.
But it wasn't covered in the Pentagon Papers because that study ended in 1968 before President Nixon came in. And I hoped that people would draw a line there, connect the dots, as they say now, and see that that line was extending into a fifth administration. They didn't, on the whole, actually. They were ready to believe a new president who said, no, that's history. That all ended when I came in. Very hard to convince people that the current president that they just voted for is lying to them.
Yeah. Well, it's like the surveys that constantly show that Americans have little confidence in Congress as a whole, but they think their congressman is doing a great job.
That is a good analogy. Yeah. I do think that I have the impression now that the public remains misinformed on a lot of aspects of Vietnam. A majority still believe that Saddam was involved in 9/11 somehow and that there were W1Ds in Iraq, amazingly enough. And yet, I think that a majority of the public does think they were deceived by the president on the intelligence information.
We're speaking with Daniel Ellsberg on the Eagle 93.9. Daniel, Were there others inside the government, outside the presidential administrations that you mentioned, congressmen, senators, who were aware of the lies that were being told to the American public?
Well, yes and no. There were, in fact, a number of senators in the president's own party in 1964-65, and the Democrats controlled Congress throughout that period very decisively, especially after 1964. And the leadership in the Senate in particular was against the war. It wasn't so much that they knew exactly what the president was doing. They didn't know, in fact, the degree to which they were being lied to. But they did understand that this is going to be a very unpromising struggle and very large war and long war. I'm talking now about the head of the Foreign Relations Committee, Senator Fulbright, the Senate Majority Leader, Mansfield, who was an expert on Asia, and even the senator's, rather the president's mentor in the Senate, the most powerful man probably, Southern Senator Richard Russell. And all of them thought that he should stay out of Vietnam and not involve us anymore, one way or another. But as members of the president's own party, they felt their major loyalty was, I don't know whether they would put it to the president or to the party, but they did not tell the public their misgivings. And they did manage to be fooled to a certain extent about how deeply he was getting in. But they could have told the public their own reasons for feeling that this was a wrong course of direction. They did not do that. And they weren't alone. A large number of senators, not as powerful as they individually, but Senator Church and Cooper and even Aiken from the Republican Party, all of them would have more than supported President Johnson if he had chosen a different course. They would have applauded it and been with him. But they weren't willing to split with him in public. And that's a very similar course to the Republicans today. Hard to know how many Republicans may feel the president is really on a wrong course today. Who knows? There may be a lot of them. But you'd never know it because they're not about to tell us.
We're speaking with Daniel Ellsberg, the man who brought the Pentagon Papers to the public through the New York Times in 1971. It was an eye-opening experience as we learned for the first time that the government wasn't telling us the truth about what had happened all along in Vietnam. Are there parallels to what we're seeing today in the way this administration is pursuing the conflicts in Afghanistan and Iraq? We'll continue our discussion with Daniel Ellsberg next on the Eagle 93.9.
The Drive with Derek Gilbert, your city, your station, the Eagle 93.9.
Honored to be joined this afternoon by one of the central figures of the Watergate, Vietnam era. Well, actually, in a tangential way related to the Watergate era as well.
Oh, actually. Yeah. That's another story. You know, I was pretty involved in that, but that's a different story.
That's for another day. We're speaking with Daniel Ellsberg, the man who brought the Pentagon Papers to the New York Times and opened the eyes of the American public to the truth of what was going on in Vietnam. And any government has to strike a balance, especially in an open society, strike a balance between what the public needs to know and what the public ought to know. And I think we're wrestling with that today, just as we did back in the 60s and 70s with the Vietnam War. Daniel, do you see evidence today that this government, this administration, is following a similar course of action to the Johnson administration in the 60s regarding what we're doing in Iraq and Afghanistan?
Well, as I said earlier, they follow almost exactly the same playbook in terms of getting us into the war with lying very simply about the information they had, the nature of the information, how certain it was, how equivocal. They presented very problematic, ambiguous, small amounts of information on the possibility of nuclear weapons or of chemical or biological weapons in Iraq, which in fact did not exist. But there was some indications that they might. And they presented that as unequivocal, clear proof, bulletproof evidence, as Rumsfeld called it.
Slam dunk was another word, phrase that was used.
Yeah, right. That was by the CIA director to the president, mm-hmm. telling him what he wanted to hear so that he could tell it to the American people. And that was very like, let's say, the Tonkin Gulf incidents that led us into the war. Some very ambiguous, controversial, evidence inside, very uncertain evidence that our destroyers were being attacked in the South China Sea off Vietnam, an attack which in fact was not happening. These were all false alarms that were coming in, mistaken sonar and radar readings. Were presented to the public as unequivocal evidence that we were under attack in a way that required reprisal. And plans that had actually existed for expanding the war to North Vietnam since the beginning of the year, since all of his military advisors believed that without expanding the war, we would lose. We would be forced out of Vietnam. Those plans were put into effect in the guise of a reprisal to an attack that, in fact, had not taken place. And that was followed by a president running an election campaign on the grounds that he sought no wider war, just on a one-shot retaliation. Although those plans, by everyone inside, were expected to be carried out for a very widened war as soon as the election was over, as actually happened. So, in other words, a very similar kind of deception that went on. Again, you may remember, we can hardly remember now, really months, if not a year or so, went by with the military, under directions from the White House in Iraq, were denying that the war was continuing after mission accomplished, that there was a war on, just a little scattered action by last-ditch forces, you know, elements. We can hardly remember that now. That was 3 years ago.
Right.
And so we've been in a war, and we're going to be in a war there for a very long time. I think the American people haven't been at all introduced to a notion that I'm sure is on paper and widely understood inside the Pentagon, and that is that that war will continue as long as American troops are there, that there are no plans for bringing those American troops home. The notion that we'll leave as they stand up, I think, is basically a delusion, in the sense, if it really holds out the idea that there won't be American troops fighting and dying there, it's a good prospect that we will be fighting there as long as we've been in Japan or Germany or Okinawa. I'm talking 50 and 60 years, because the oil will still be there, and I don't see which president, Democratic or Republican, I'm sorry to say this, because it sounds very fatalistic. I'm not saying this is certain, because I will be struggling along with a lot of others to get us out of there, as I am right now. But I have to say, on that count, I think the odds favor, not the odds I'm going with, the odds I'm fighting favor our being there much longer than I'm alive.
We're speaking with Daniel Ellsberg of Pentagon Papers fame about the parallels between Vietnam and Iraq, not so much from the war standpoint, although there certainly are parallels that are sadly seem to be developing in the news that have come out of Iraq in recent months, but more from the standpoint of what information has been released to the American public from the American government. You mentioned the Pentagon. You said this is widely known inside the Pentagon. Did I understand it correctly, that this is basically understood that we're going to be in Iraq for a long, long time?
I'm sure that's true, because there are plenty of realistic people inside the Pentagon. They can see what I see. I watched Vietnam. I was there for 2 years. I struggled against it for many years, even more than that. And I know that history. It took 10 years to get us out of there, and as I say, there was no oil there. But, you know, that's not the whole subject. The sad, very, more than sad, tragic, awful prospect that I see is that this same prospect, this same playbook, is going to be used to get us into a war in Iran and before this president is out of office. Most people don't think that it will happen before the election, though I'll have to say I happen to think there's a real possibility of that, that he will attack Iran before the election. But people, most people think that, who do see the likelihood of an attack on Iran, think that it will come later, sometime next year, or before he's out of office in any case. And many others will say, well, we've heard people leak the fact very authoritatively through Cy Hirsch in the New Yorker, in a number of articles, that the plans exist for such an attack, and that the president is determined to carry them out to bring about regime change in Iran. But they just can't believe that he would do something that crazy, or that he would be allowed to do it. crazy because the ability of the Iranians to retaliate in a variety of ways, all of which point toward very high oil prices in the world,
mm-hmm.
but attacks on our own troops in Iraq, attacks on our shipping in the area and in the Persian Gulf, and possible terrorist responses of various kinds. All of those seem to couldn't do that. I'm afraid this is an administration that is crazy enough to do that. It's the same people who got us into the war in Iraq, and that was just about as crazy. And I'm afraid that I believe that they're capable of doing that again.
Daniel, sadly, we've run out of time. This has gone by much too quickly, and we certainly appreciate you taking the time out of your schedule to share some of your insight based on your experiences.
Well, I'm glad. What I'm hoping for right now is that people inside will come out with the documented evidence of what I've been saying and wake us up before the war instead of waiting for that till war has started, as I'm afraid I did.
Well, Daniel, again, we appreciate your work and the risks that you took, and we, again, thank you for your time this afternoon on the Eagle 93.9. This is The Drive. I'm Derek Gilbert. More coming up.